And we're going to turn now to the subject of Irish military intelligence during World War II. Ireland, of course, was officially neutral during the war, or the emergency as it was known here. But it wasn't as straightforward as all that. The Directorate of Military Intelligence, also known as G2, broke codes, intercepted German naval and aerial communications, and shared information with the Allies, neutral schmutral. The people who took part in these efforts were, for a long time, mostly unnamed and unhonoured. We're going to hear now the story of one of these individuals in this report from Mark McMenamin.
Wind your head up here. The lone wolf.
This is Luke Smith. I'm in his attic at his house in Cabinteely, and he's showing me a very special family possession.
This is our prized possession from the attic in Belton Park. In fact, it spent its entire life in the attic in Belton Park. It's a radio.
Luke's father, Luke Sr., was a member of G2, the intelligence branch of the Irish Defence Forces.
My father was Luke P. Smith and was a servant all his life to Ireland. When my father went up to the attic, nobody was allowed there.
Luke's father's radio was no ordinary radio. He told his children he was listening to football matches in England. But in reality, he was listening into illegal German radio traffic during World War II.
I wouldn't even know how to connect it up to make it work. But he spent lots of time up there listening to football matches on the radio. Now, of course, we know that, in fact, what he was doing was intercepting calls on it. More than likely, checking out German traffic within Dublin. He was an amazingly quiet man, insignificant. You wouldn't notice him anywhere, not loud in any way. He faded into the background. He was always the quiet man. There were some quirks I remember from my own days in Belton Park as a kid growing up, that he had this annoying habit of having his dinner, or his tea in those days. It wasn't his dinner. Everybody had their dinner in the middle of the day, but he had his tea when he came home from work, and he'd have the Evening Herald, and all of a sudden he'd fold up the paper and say, sorry Molly, I have to go to Eason's. And she said okay, and that'd be it. There was never any. Now, the number of times I heard that quote, sorry Molly, I have to go to Eason's.
Luke's work with G2 was subject to the Official Secrets Act, but he had a novel way of slipping out of the home to go to work.
Eason's had nothing to do with anything. It was obviously a code between Luke and Molly, and it meant something has come up, I must go. So he was going to Eason's.
On more than one occasion, Luke's father brought him along to help him monitor some of the German spying operations in Ireland during the war.
I was dispatched in to see if they'd any apples for sale, and always got the door slammed in me, and out I had to go, put a big iron gate on it anyway out. And I said, I don't think they've any apples, because they're spying the door on me. And my father would toddle on. There were three German houses that he was very interested in, and at various stages, members of the family tried to buy apples from them. We didn't think very much. We knew very much about it at that time, but it's only in retrospect that, of course, with the war on, that he obviously had an interest in that.
Luke Smith worked closely with Dr. Richard Hayes, the Irish state cryptographer during World War II.
He was very, very close to Richard Hayes, but the one that we knew best of all was Dan Brown, who was a regular visitor to our house.
Speaking in the 1980s, Colonel Dan Brown, the former director of Irish military intelligence, outlined just how severe the German threat of invasion was.
In 1939 and 40, they were thinking in terms of a submarine war. But they were thinking in terms of the submarine war of 1917 and early 1918, which was fought out off the south of Ireland. And the big development that, of course, came in the Second War was the invention of ASDIC, and, or what the Americans called sonar, which gave a great jump forward in the detection of submarines.
Luke Smith worked quietly in the shadows for G2, and as a result of his work and those like him, all German spies active in Ireland during the war were all eventually captured.
He was a mysterious man. He was a fabulous, quiet man and a brilliant father to his family.
Luke P. Smith died on January 25th, 1977, aged 75 years. He was still on active service with G2 on the day that he died.
The story there of Luke P. Smith, who worked during the Second World War for G2, the Directorate of Military Intelligence, and he was remembered there by his son and his namesake, Luke Smith. That report was by Mark McManaman, who joins me now in studio. Mark, you're very, very welcome indeed. You've written the recently published book Codebreaker, which looks at, in detail, G2, at German spies in Ireland, the people like Goertz and people like that, and also Richard Hayes and his efforts to break Nazi ciphers. Tell us a little bit more, though, about Luke Smith. Would he? What was the day job?
Well, thanks very much for having me, Miles. And indeed, what you said earlier, neutral schmutral, in my opinion, as well.
Oh, yeah.
Luke Smith is an incredibly interesting man. He worked in the National Library, much like Richard Hayes.
So Hayes was his boss, basically.
Yeah, they would have worked together. And, Luke was he was a library assistant. He would have started out there. But Luke Smith would have learned his intelligence work, much like a lot of the guys in G2 with Michael Collins and the intelligence section of the old IRA. And indeed, Collins taught very highly of Smith, and there's even a picture of the two of them together, and he's following him closely behind. So he would have learned his intelligence gathering techniques in that regard. And of course, then with the outbreak of the war, he's moved full time into G2, and it becomes much more of a, he becomes much more of an asset in terms of intelligence gathering, as you could hear there in the report.
Tell me more about the apples, the story of the apples, because it is a fascinating story.
Yeah, and this was quite interesting because Luke was telling me this when I interviewed him, and I found it incredibly interesting indeed. There were a number of German safe houses in the IRA safe houses, I suppose, and German spies that would have been staying in these. People like Wilhelm Prietz, who would have been one German spy, Werner Unland, and of course the more famous German spies like Hermann Goertz and Günther Schultz. And this one house in particular was on the north side. It was in Drumcondra. And Luke P. Smith, Luke Smith Jr.'s father, had a novel way, I suppose, of trying to gain some information on who was staying in this particular house. He sends Luke up to knock on the door and ask, have they any apples for sale? And, of course, the bemused German says, there's no apples for sale here. But just a little bit down the road, there's Luke Sr. with his notepad taking down the various particulars and details and the physical appearance of the man who answered the door. So this is one of the many novel ways they have of gathering intelligence and seeing who's who on the streets in Dublin.
Speaking of novels, you're reminding me of Joe Joyce's novels, terrific novel Echolab,
yeah,
which deals
yeah.
with all of this period. What kind of radio traffic would Smith have been monitoring in those days? I mean, it wasn't voice messages, was it?
No. These are messages that were broadcast in Morse code, okay? German spies had a number of different ways of communicating messages in Ireland back out to the German High Command. Some of these would have been, I suppose, handwritten, encoded and enciphered and sent out through the post. Of course, G2 would have had postal sensors, trying to catch this stuff and forward it onto G2. But where Luke P. Smith comes into the picture, and many others in Army military intelligence, such as Captain John Patrick O'Sullivan, they are listening in on listening stations, okay? They're listening in and they're trying to listen into the broadcasting frequency that the messages are being transmitted via Morse code out in. They're taking them down in numerical sequence, and they're brought then into the cryptography units in G2 or in Irish military intelligence, which is located in a building called the Red House on Montpellier Hill. It's actually still there today. It's a derelict building opposite the Criminal Courts of Justice. It's a listed building as far as I'm aware, but they're brought in there to be decoded by members of G2, and of course then Dr. Richard Hayes, who is unofficially, I suppose, the state cryptographer during this period. He's Ireland's one-man Bletchley Park.
Yeah, and not afraid to share information and to share intelligence with his friends across the water.
No, and that's the key thing about people like Richard Hayes, Luke Smith, Dan Bryan, all these guys. And in my opinion, are very, very much great patriots, because they could see the woods from the trees. They could see that it was important to share this information with the British, with the Allies, and not to be kind of, I suppose, narrowed down by a sense of nationalism, because they could see that the Ireland was very vulnerable on two fronts, from a German invasion, but also a preemptive Allied invasion if the Germans were to gain a foothold here. So it was very important to share this information with the Allies. And of course, you know, it ensured that the right side won in the end.
And Hayes wasn't just a formidable code breaker, he was a formidable people breaker as well. He was an interrogator.
Yeah, he was an interrogator, and not in the style that you would think. You know, you think that it's almost in terms of, as you say, people breaking, but Hayes formed a great relationship with Hermann Goertz and really brought him on side, and it was then that he was able to outsmart him and break his communication code. Now, the Goertz cipher is very important in historical terms, because, as we know, it's an ISOS cipher, which there's an entire section of Bletchley Park dedicated to trying to break. And Bletchley Park are having difficulty with this. When Hayes finally breaks the cipher, they send over staff over to Ireland, over to Dublin during the war, to see how this encryption method can be broken. And it's hugely important to the war.
I think what you're basically telling us is why we weren't invaded during the Second World War. Mark McMillan, thanks very much for joining us on The History Show
this evening.
And the book is called Codebreaker. I would highly recommend it, published by Gill. That's all we've got time for this evening's programme. Details of all our items, as well as podcasts, are available on our website, rte.ie/history. My thanks tonight to Damien Chanel on sound and our researcher, Liz Gillis. The History Show is a Pegasus production for RTE. From me, Miles Dungan, and producer Lorcan Clancy. Goodbye, and thanks for listening.
Follow us on Twitter at RTE History Show.